Let me go now to a more contemporary person who saw the illusion of time, was able to get beyond it. This was a master who died in 1950, so not so long ago. And he was born, his name was Venkataraman. This guy, Venkataraman, was born in a village in the south of India, and he later became very honored in India. And he also was seen by many Westerners who experienced his power. Those who later on saw him gave him a name. They called him Sri Ramana Maharshi. Sri is like our sir, in like a knightly way. It's a statement of honor, Sri Ramana Maharshi. And this guy was able to go beyond the bounds of time. And he did it in exactly the same way that I'm telling you, by giving up his ego. When he was 12 years old and his father died, he went to live with an uncle who was in the nearby city of Madurai. In 1896, at the age of 16, he left his uncle's home and he journeyed to one of South India's holy places. It was a mountain, a sacred mountain that had the name Arunachala. He had heard of this mountain briefly when he was visiting his elderly relatives, and they had told him that this was a very special place. You gotta go. Merely hearing the name Arunachala had a very magical effect on this guy. And he was only a boy, but this time he was very young. But yet, an internal kind of an excitement grew in him as a result, which he could not understand. He couldn't explain it to himself. So a few months after hearing the name, he decided to go to this place. And he had an experience which really changed his whole life. He was in his bedroom of the second floor of his uncle's house just before he left, and he was suddenly overwhelmed with something that maybe you've been overwhelmed with from time to time, the fear of death. And he became firmly convinced that he was going to die any minute now. This feeling persisted for such a time, and even though he logically knew he was healthy, he shouldn't be going through this, but he nevertheless felt this. He was shaking with fear. He began to ponder the significance of this death. What does this mean? What does it mean? Well, he was alone in a room, and he decided, I might as well just surrender to it and go through it. If that's what's going to happen. So he lay down on the floor and decided that he would act out. He would get into it. He would play the part of somebody dying. And as he did so, he would ask himself questions. In other words, while I'm dying, I'm going to find out what's happening to me while I'm dying. I'm going to ask myself questions. I'm going to go on with this intellectual processing. So he lay down, he put his arms to his sides, held his breath. He actually tried to die, held his breath, and he said to himself, now that death has come to me, what does it mean? What is dying? Is it this body that is dying? If it's dying, it's going to be carried off to the cremation ground and burned to ashes. But with the death of the body, am I going to die? Am I just my body? No, the body is growing silent and inert, but I still feel the full force of my personality, and even the voice of my eye is coming through here, this body. Does the body die? And I die with it? Or am I apart from the body? If I'm the spirit transcending the body, then the body can die, but the spirit transcends it. It can't be touched by the death. This means that I am deathless spirit. Well, how should we look at that? I mean, as scientists, some neurologists would say that there's a part of the brain that thinks itself to be spirit. All right, there's a part of the brain that thinks itself to be spirit. All right, well, we've located that when you're thinking of spiritual things, this part of your brain is firing. All right. But I ask the scientist, I ask myself as a scientist, does the fact that my brain is firing while I'm thinking spiritual things indicate that the firing is the thinking of those spiritual things? Or is that just the energy that is exposed to my eye of science when this thought is entering into the brain? And maybe the spiritual impetus for it, that which moves it, lies outside of the brain in the first place. How do we know? Anyway, this guy, whether he was under the illusion of thinking this or not. I won't even get into it with you. Let's just say he believed this and decided to act from now on as if this was the fundamental truth of his life, which is what I'm recommending you do too if you want to get into this. His self-realization was instantaneous and complete and irreversible. His ego was gone. He was lost in the flood of pure self, and I use the word self spelled with a great big S rather than with a little tiny S, awareness. Soon after this experience, he left for the mountains. When he arrived there, he left go of every single thing he had, all of his possessions, gone. He didn't care whether he lived or he died. His fingernails grew to, you know, really ugly lengths, and his hair fell out, his teeth began to fall out. He just became a mess. And people noticed him, and in India, people pay attention to that, and they don't just let it go. In America, we say, get out of here, you bum! You know, go find a shelter, you homeless slob! You know, we're in the West, we're a little bit heartless about homeless people. We don't like to look at anything which frightens us. And believe me, this would have been a frightening sight, but in India, they're a little different. They don't throw this guy, particularly since he was in Arunachala, which is a sacred mountain, and that even said, you know, just because he looks like a bum doesn't mean he's a bum. This guy may be a real guru. He may really be an avatar. We got to pay attention to this guy. We got to really look at this. And so with that, and people coming to him, feeding him, bathing him, combing his hairs, giving him botis, little things to wear around his waist so he wasn't exposing himself to the children as they walked by, he gradually became a sacred being of which people came to and hung out. Hung out, not asking questions, hung out with him, because being in his presence induced a kind of a sacred feeling that they all began to feel. And people would come to him and hang out with him and ask him questions. And even before they would say a word, he would tell them who and what they were. He would mention details of their life that they had before coming to India. These are people from Portugal, from Spain, from Africa, from the United States. He would see their lives. And the people would go, wow, that's amazing. You're a real mind reader, aren't you? No, he's not a mind reader. Unless you want to say reading your own mind is mind reading. Because he was reading his own mind. Because his own mind was the mind that occupied all of them at the same time. He was tuning to the one mind, the Krishna mind, not the Arjuna mind. And that's the secret of time travel. That's what the yoga of time travel is all about. And that's how you can defeat time. See you next time when we bring this all to a conclusion.
This concludes Session 11. Our program continues with Session 12, The Technology of God, with Fred Allen Wolfe.